One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Athlete, horseman, boxer, wilderness explorer, rough riding hero of cavalry combat. Here he is, all 5'8" of taut muscle, razor-sharp jaw, piercing eyes, and dapper mustache. He's Gilded Age masculinity in a top hat and tails as the 19th century transitions to the 20th. He is Theodore Roosevelt. T.R., the man who would be president. And as it happens, Teddy was one of the most surprisingly sensitive of them all.
Good day all, I'm Don Wildman, and this is American History Hit. President Theodore Roosevelt was known to be a man's man, a dynamo, the original rough and ready, a determined statesman, brilliant writer, courageous explorer, and naturalist. He was also a visionary defender of liberty and justice for his people who became the 26th President of the United States. Roosevelt understood life was to be lived as a series of challenges to be boldly confronted and overcome, but there is also complexity and nuance requiring preemptive calculation and care. He was a one-of-a-kind man, but he was also the kind of man deeply affected by the outlook and influence of strong women around him, which in our nation's androcentric history is too often a quality of greatness overlooked. The Loves of Theodore Roosevelt, The Women Who Created a President, is a new book to be released the first week of May 2024 that examines this less understood aspect of Theodore Roosevelt, giving credit where credit is due to the inner circle women of T.R.'s life, his mother, his wives, his sisters, who guided and shaped this legend of a man who still means so much to so many Americans. It is authored by Edward O'Keefe, who joins us today. Hello, Ed.
Well, hello, Don. Great to be with you.
Nice to have you. If you mean to be a man who matters, listen to the women around you. Behind every great man, there are all those phrases. They seem especially true for Teddy Roosevelt. Why so?
Well, in Theodore Roosevelt's case, it's 5 women. It's his mother, his 2 sisters, and his 2 wives. And I think that's the part of history that has been lost in Theodore Roosevelt. Arguably, T.R. is the most masculine president in the American memory. And it's a surprise, perhaps, to some to see this incredible influence of these fabulous women in his life.
Yeah. Let's just name them first off the bat here, the whole cast of characters. Martha Stewart Bullock Roosevelt, mother, Mitty, known as. Anna Roosevelt Cowles, sister, known as Bamie. Corrine Roosevelt Robinson, sister, known as Connie, and then his first wife, Alice, and his second wife, Edith. 5 ladies, as you say, without exception, all of them exceptional people. Speaks well of the man, doesn't it, that he was born of and most drawn to women of character and clarity. Let's first talk about his childhood and his relationships to his mother. Martha Roosevelt, how do you raise a boy to become T.R.?
Exactly. That's the question, Don. And I think people are surprised to learn in The Loves of Theodore Roosevelt that Mitty, who has been really much maligned in history as completely inconsequential in her son's development in life, that she is really quite essential to his formation. Theodore Roosevelt, as a child, was not the Roosevelt we know from Mount Rushmore. He was not the chiseled hero of San Juan Hill or Kettle Hill. He was sickly. He, you know, as a boy, he's very asthmatic. And you know, to say that he's asthmatic, this is 1850s, 1860s New York. I mean, it's smog and the sewage and horrible water conditions. Even though the Roosevelts were wealthy, he was subjected to environmental catastrophe all around him. And he's living a life of the mind, of books. He's kind of geeky naturalist, if you will, known for putting his foot on his knee in such a way that he draws comparisons to a stork when he's reading. So I don't think he's the lively, manly TR of his adulthood. And it's his mother who really understands that his life is in danger. I mean, she and her mother, who lives with her, so their grandmother actually lives with the Roosevelts while the Civil War is raging, as well as his aunt. His father is away much of the time. He's down in Washington, D.C., meeting with President Lincoln and trying to draw an allotment system where soldiers from the Union can send money back to their families to support them while they're away during the Civil War. So Thee, as great as he is, and we can certainly talk about his great influence on T.R.'s life, he's gone. It's Mitty, and Mitty's mother, Mitty's sister, and the cadre of women in the household who are really raising Theodore Roosevelt.
The unlikelihood is that she's a Confederate. I mean, she's from Georgia in the midst of the Civil War in New York City. It's a crazy thing. She is a fish out of water, isn't she?
Not just that. I think that it's another extraordinary thing to recognize about Mitty. In the space of 6 years, she has 4 children. She loses contact with 2 brothers who are fighting for the Confederacy. And she has a husband who's largely away much of the war. That will rack on anyone's nerves. She also, I think, provides a really important lesson to TR very young. She is living in a house divided, in a nation divided. Theodore Sure. Roosevelt is learning from his parents firsthand civic disagreement. And what could be more of a disagreement than differing viewpoints on the Civil War? Yet they still loved one another, they still respected one another, and they still lived together with these opposing views, teaching their children to disagree without being disagreeable.
Right. There's also another aspect of his family background, which I think deserves recognition. The fact that he comes from such Dutch ancestry. His father is, that whole line goes way back. The Dutch are famously, throughout the ages, empowering to women, right? Compared to other cultures, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think that this is something that's recognized in the relationship between Thee and Mitty. It's recognized in the relationship between Theodore Roosevelt's grandparents, C.D.S. Roosevelt. It was a remarkable figure. He's really responsible for reviving the Roosevelt family fortunes. But there's also that Quaker influence, the Dutch Reformed Presbyterian influence, this feeling of noblesse oblige. To whom much is given, much is required. And I think there's an equanimity and equality built into the relationship between husband and wife because they need to work together to succeed in this new America.
I'm not sure about the Dutch, but I know from my own Quaker background that there was a lot about estates transferring, generations when women would take control of estates as opposed to just the assumption of men. And that had a whole trickle-down vibe to a family.
Big deal. That's a very not a commonly held view in the 19th century. I mean, that will influence Theodore Roosevelt when he writes in 1880 this incredibly effusive declaration of equality between men and women. That is, of course, influenced by Alice Hathaway Lee, which we'll hear about a little bit later. But really, I mean, he, in 1880, Theodore Roosevelt writes about property ownership for women, the equality before the law, the fact that women should become doctors and lawyers, that they should, of course, have the right to vote, which is 40 years before the enactment of the 19th Amendment. It's a very reform-minded, progressive viewpoint at a young age.
Well, he's writing that at Harvard. I mean, he's a college student writing in his senior thesis. He also believes that women should keep their maiden names in marriage.
Right.
And let's remember that this is the subject at this time. I mean, it's really since the 1840s, the equality of women, suffrage of women, all of this, right down to how households run. That's what Americans are really thinking about in certainly the elite circles. It's a big, big subject that he's going to take on in his lifetime.
Well, and let's think about where the origin of all that comes from. Again, Mitty, right? Mitty is a fiery, independent woman. There's a great letter between Thee and Mitty during the Civil War, right before the Civil War, actually, in which Thee says, "Do not become a strong-minded woman. Well, that's impossible. She is a strong-minded woman. I mean, Thee's brother will note of Thee and Midi that between your solemnity and her liveliness, you make an even match, right? It's the cliche, opposites attract. Thee, who has been adored by history as this quintessential example of manhood, the example from which Theodore Roosevelt drew his strength to make his body as well as his mind. That is true. I mean, it's there. It's in, you know, the fact that his father died when TR was 20 years old and Thee was only 46, of course, is going to bring his father to a even more legendary status in his memory and mind because he was gone too soon. But it is Midi who has this incredibly vivacious personality. She has coy turns of phrase. I mean, it's said of her, her brother says, she's a lively lassie, a black-haired, lively lassie with a ready tongue. I mean, if that doesn't sound like Theodore Roosevelt, I don't know what does. It is from Midi that TR derives his infectious personality, which of course will be the source of so much political and personal success. And it's also after the death of Thee, Midi, who tells the family, we need to live for the living and not for the dead. That is a hard thing to learn, obviously. When you have tragedy early in your life, there are two paths forward. You can either move forward or you can stand still or move backward. And it is from Midi that TR perhaps learned his most valuable trait, resilience. The will to go on in the face of the inevitably terrible events that will occur in life.
That's why your book is so necessary. There's a theme here about American society that's even larger than Theodore Roosevelt, that you can really trace the innovations and changes politically and culturally in this country to the emergence of women's rights as an issue. That's certainly one of the most important and less understood and recognized parts of the development of American culture. It's really fascinating. And a kind of microcosm of that is Theodore Roosevelt's political career. 1883, in the Assembly, he's a New York Assemblyman, he introduces a bill for corporal punishment for wife beaters. This was a huge issue, among others, at the time. The whole women's movement was confronting things on many different fronts, not just nationally and, you know, but also, you know, on the home front. Let's talk about his sisters. I, too, have sisters. Many of us do. Lucky men.
A lucky one.
I mention it every episode. I'm the youngest of four sisters, and it is a connect the dots with world leaders who have sisters and those who don't. Bamy and Connie, Anna and Corrine are their actual names. Let's talk about them one at a time. Bamy played an advisory role for him later in politically. How did she learn that business?
Well, that's a great question, Don. Let's again go back to the beginning. Bamy is born in 1855. Her brother, Theodore, is born in 1858. They're only 3 years apart. But Bamy, will, throughout her life, will almost be a substitute mother to TR. She is the one who moves him into his Harvard dorm and furnishes it. She's the one to whom he writes during college of his success, almost like you would to your parents. She is the one who really understands that politics are a passion for him and pushes him toward a profession that at that point is not very common among the elites. I mean, if you have money, you have power. What's the point of a vote or running for office? I mean, he's influenced by an uncle who serves in Congress, but it's really Bamy who understands that Theodore is a special person and needs the support and guidance to really soothe his kind of impetuous personality. I'll also say one thing personally. We talked about the physical struggles that TR had with asthma growing up. Bamy had a spinal defect that really prevented her from almost standing for a minute at a time. You know, Thee, the father, will form the first orthopedic hospital in New York as a result of Bamy's spinal defect. And it is from his older sister that Theodore Roosevelt learns the will through pain. I mean, again, a common trait that we ascribe to TR, his almost supernatural ability to tolerate these strenuous life adventures. Where is he learning that? Bamy, his older sister. But yes, you're right, Don. As they continue through life, Bamy becomes, I like to say, what Robert F. Kennedy was to John F. Kennedy. This sibling and trusted advisor, this strategic political mind who could look around corners, make introductions, protect their siblings' back, and really watch out for those who had his best interests in mind and what decisions he needed to make.
Lest we think it's just a hovering sister, she has her own life. She becomes his press secretary eventually, before there's even such a position.
So Eleanor Roosevelt, the famous first lady, puts it best. She says of her aunts, because these were her aunts and knew them quite well, that you really went to Bammy for advice. You went to Connie for empathy or sympathy. Mm. Connie was the more emotive, and she was a poet. She was a writer. She could be the one you went for an emotional outpost. And with that sensitivity, Connie really understood that the personal life of Theodore Roosevelt was fodder for the press, for a curious public that wanted to know more and was fascinated by this rambunctious family. The youngest president ever to ascend to the White House has 6 children from 2 marriages. There's a menagerie of animals moving all about the White House. I mean, Algonquin the pony is taking the elevator up to the 2nd floor. Josiah the badger is being held out in the garden. You know, I mean, Emily the snake is wrapped around Alice's neck. I mean, Connie recognized that if these personal stories were leaked to the press, I mean, because she did it over Edith's objections. Edith wanted privacy, did not want the stories of her husband and her children necessarily out there for public consumption. But Connie knew if those stories made their way to the press and thus the public, that it would endear Theodore Roosevelt and his family. And not only that, it would put him in the pantheon of great presidents after his death, where she would fight very hard to preserve his legacy. I think one of the reasons that T.R. is considered one of the top 5 presidents to this day is not only because of his accomplishments, it's because his sisters, Bammy and Connie, worked so hard immediately after his presidency to put him there. And by the way, one last thing I'll say, Don, of Bammy, you know, Alice Roosevelt Longworth, T.R.'s daughter, will say of Bammy that had Bammy lived and been a man, she, not T.R., would have been president of the United States. And that question was asked of Eleanor Roosevelt in the 1950s, long after T.R. was gone, said, Eleanor, do you agree with what Alice said about your father, that it would be Bammy, not T.R. that was president? And she said, well, that very easily could have been so. So none other than Eleanor Roosevelt thought Bammy, not T.R., would have been president in a different time.
I'll be back with more American history after this short break.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's also this era, the era of the tail that wags the dog. You have the emergence of media in the Gilded Age, or coming up to the Gilded Age, where these periodicals and these newspapers and all of that is beginning to be a story being told about America, the mirror to America. And those who are smart know how to manipulate that, how to use that to their best advantage. And those sisters are storytellers. They understand this is a tale unfolding, and they know how to do it.
Well, Doris Kearns Goodwin captures this brilliantly in The Bully Pulpit. I, in The Loves of Theodore Roosevelt, try to capture some of that imagination and storytelling that took place, particularly with Connie. But you're right. You know, Bammy is, again, this person who knows T.R. so well, knows who he needs to talk with in 1895 as he's struggling as the New York City police commissioner. And he's one of multiple commissioners, so he doesn't have universal executive power. And of course, he's always trying to reform something. He's always trying to change something, which quickly makes him unpopular in whatever job he has. And so she knows he needs a change. And once again, he thinks his political life is over. He's done. He's been run out of office or, you know, appointed office yet again. And it is Bammy who says, I know who you need to meet with. You need to meet with Bellamy Storer and his wife, so a congressman who was influential with McKinley. And that leads to TR's involvement in the McKinley campaign, which leads to TR's appointment as Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Every time you think he's down and out, Bammy is the one who's there behind the scenes. When TR ascends to the presidency in September of 1901, it's Bammy's house that holds the first cabinet meetings. Her home is known by the press as the Little White House. I mean, that's an extraordinary degree of influence.
Well, you've got to make the connections, and that's what the women were doing. They still are. You know, it's that intuition that matters so much. So you've got a guy with a strong mother, super strong mother, two strong sisters, the Dutch ancestry, as I say, Gilded Age, expansive America happening around you. TR marries his sweetheart, Alice Hathaway Lee, 1880. He's a college student. Love at first sight. I mean, that's the other thing about him. He's really hard on the sleeve, passionate guy. Alice is an athlete, a tennis player, competitive woman. Fair to call her an iconoclast?
Oh, absolutely. I think of her, you know, this is Audrey Hepburn or Kate Hepburn, right? She's just, she's vivacious and living and beautiful and beguiling and athletic and all those things. She must have just been a bombshell in TR's life.
And in 1881, he's elected to the New York State Assembly out of the Upper East Side. I love this. It's the Silk Stocking District, they call it. He serves 82, 83, and 84. But in 1884, the events that play the defining role in TR's personal life, eventually really his professional destiny as well, happens on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1884. Take us through that day, would you, Ed?
Well, Don, let's take that American history hit. That is the moment. That's the crucible. Let's back up a little bit to February 11th. Alice Hathaway Lee, now Alice Hathaway Roosevelt, is pregnant with their first child. It's taken them some years to get pregnant. Later, it'll be confirmed that she did indeed undergo some sort of gynecological operation in order to allow her to become pregnant. So it's been a bit of a struggle. And finally, they're going to have their first child. She's right on the cusp of having the baby. And of course, Theodore Roosevelt believes in, he's a bit superstitious. He believes a bit in destiny, and he's got a poetic side to him. So he says, of course, the baby is going to be born on February 14th, 1884, the four-year anniversary to the day they announced their engagement in 1880. So he goes back to Albany, somewhat inexplicably. Okay, fine, men weren't in the delivery room at those days, but you know, they've gone through a lot of trouble to get pregnant. She's on the cusp of having the baby. His mother is not feeling all that well. He goes back to Albany. He does his work. He gets a telegram that says that the baby has been born, a baby girl, and that Alice is only fairly well. He celebrates. He goes back to do his committee work. And then a second telegram arrives. And that second telegram has been lost to history, but we know his reaction from his fellow New York State legislatures. Theodore Roosevelt's face was, quote, ashen. He went stark white and ran from the New York Assembly to the train station. Now, normally, the trip from Albany to New York City would take 2.5 hours. There was a blinding, dense, precipitous fog that had descended over the city. The New York Times called it suicidal weather, that those inclined to atmospheric reverberations best not go outside because it was so dense and thick you couldn't see your finger out in front of your face. This is the New York. It takes 5.5 hours, 5.5 excruciating hours for TR to reach New York City. He runs from Grand Central to 6 West 57th. And there, Elliot Roosevelt has said, there is a curse on this house. Mother is dying and Alice is dying too. TR rushes upstairs to the third floor. He's with his wife until 2:30 in the morning on February 14th, 1884, Valentine's Day, when he's called to the second floor and his mother, Mitty, his beloved mother, who has informed so much of his life, who really is responsible for saving Theodore Roosevelt as a child, dies, succumbs to typhoid fever. He goes back up to the third floor, and for 11 hours, He refuses to let go of Alice. He's holding her so tightly in his arms, they worry that he's going to be virtually cramped and stuck in that position. And yet she too, at 1:30 in the afternoon, dies of Bright's disease, a kidney disorder related to the childbirth. And he has lost both his mother and his wife on Valentine's Day, the day he thought his daughter would be born.
Oh my Lord. I mean, I honestly have never heard of any other historical figure who went through this. I'm sure you could find it, but it's an extraordinarily unique situation. Overwhelming. And yet this is a man who hasn't even become president yet. That's how his career will go upward instead of downward. But in the meantime, this is a blow of inordinate proportions. He X's the day out in his diary very famously, a very neatly drawn X, I must say, and writes the famous phrase,
"The light has gone out of my life." And what I find significant, what I explore in the Loves of Theodore Roosevelt, is that's not just a dramatic or metaphorical statement. Alice was known to him by the nickname Sunshine. It means the light, my sunshine, has gone out of my life. It is over. And he really truly believes it. I mean, he had to be handled like a child, they said at the funeral, that he was so distraught, so depressed, that they worried for his life, that he might be so overcome with emotion, he might not be able to move forward. He does finish out his term in the assembly, but then he quits. He does not run for another term. He's politically defeated at the 1884 convention in Chicago, and he goes to the Badlands of North Dakota, the future site of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, and basically says, "I am done. I'm going to live but what I will later call the strenuous life as a rancher and a cowboy. You know, my life will be as a writer and a rancher, and I'm out."
Yeah. The newborn, his little daughter, he hands over to who? His
Mammy.
Older sister. Yeah,
Mammy.
And raises this child until she's 3 years old, right? He doesn't see her until she's three.
I mean, he's going back and forth to New York, and he's constantly, Bammy is keeping him updated. In the Loves of Theodore Roosevelt, I was fortunate enough to discover 11 new letters that Greg Wynn, the president of the Theodore Roosevelt Association, found in a safe that had been locked there since 1954, unbelievably, never seen, never written about since 1954. Greg called it the greatest discovery of Roosevelt letters since his death in 1919. And there's a letter from TR to Bammy in April of 1885. And this is the dark year. We don't know much about this year in history. We know what TR was doing. He was in the Badlands, recovering, depressed. And he says to Bammy that he's chased two strayed horses for 40 miles without gloves or a hat, which could kill you at that time in a blinding snowstorm, spends the night in a cave with a Texan cowboy, and really believes they treated him first class, and he loves this consumptive life. It's the first hint that TR is coming out of his depression, and who's on the other end of that letter? Bammy, updating him on politics, taking care of his baby, making sure that Sagamore Hill gets built, selling the house at 6 West 57th Street, buying a new townhome on Madison Avenue. She's the one making sure there's a life to come back to in New York when he's ready.
It's remarkable. The last woman in your cast is his second wife, Edith. They have a unique relationship. They've known each other pretty much all their lives, haven't they?
Well, Don, that's the other incredible thing that Mitty recognized. I described that kind of odd naturalist who lived a life of the mind and science. Well, guess what? He didn't have many friends because he's not the Roosevelt Rushmore we all know and love. He's an oddball, and Mitty invites Edith to join the Roosevelts in homeschool taught by her sister, Anna. And so really from 3 years old and onward, Edith is in the life of Theodore Roosevelt. That's extraordinarily rare that they would know each other for 57 of his 60 years.
This is a big scale relationship. I mean, she becomes the wife of a president, and she has everything about guiding him to that place, just as these other women have had their own role in that. She really becomes the first White House first lady, isn't she?
She kicks open the door to the American century with TR, and I think it all dates back to that relationship that we talked about, Don, from 3 years old on. I mean, Edith is the diametric opposite of Alice, taciturn and reserved, habitually reserved. She had a harder life. Her father was an alcoholic. They watched the degradation of their family fortune very slowly and painfully over time. When TR or the Roosevelts would come to visit, she would hide her shabby toys because she was embarrassed. I mean, she had this extraordinary poem that Edith wrote at age 14, "My Dream Castles." Only one tiny room locked they find, one thin curtain that they ne'er gaze behind. There my lost ambitions sleep, to the tear-wept slumber deep, long consigned. This my lonely sanctum is. She is a beautiful writer, but sad. You know, she's had a tough, hard childhood, and she must have felt a pang of jealousy watching this remarkable family, the Roosevelts, go off on European tours and ever increasing in their fortune and love. And really, you know, what the story of the loves of Theodore Roosevelt is relative to Edith and Alice is, I like to say that Edith was T.R.'s first love and second wife. It's a story of love found, love lost, and love found again. You know, Alice provides this. With Alice, T.R. rises like a rocket, right? He has his incredible first success. After her death, T.R. will not hold elected office for 15 years. Wow. He only lived to 60. That's one-fourth of his life. And then Edith re-enters after those tragic events of February 14th, 1884. And at first, T.R. says, I don't want to see Edith. I don't want to fall back in love. That would dishonor Alice. But inevitably, they find their way back together and boom, that spark, that inevitable connection. And who knows, you know, they're older now. They're a little wiser. They've both gone through tragedy in their life. I think they formed a partnership more respectful. And that's the foundation that becomes that success in the White House. And my goodness, I mean, how much time do you have? Edith does everything you can imagine. First to have a social secretary, first person to redesign the White House in a meaningful way. She creates what becomes the West Wing. They nickname the White House, no longer called right. The Executive Mansion. She builds a colonial garden that will become the Rose Garden. She has 40,000 guests to the White House, and they will entertain musicians and poets and writers. That's exactly what Jackie Kennedy will later famously do in the Kennedy administration. I mean, she sets the stage for every first lady to come, and she had no model to do it. That's all on top of raising six children and being T.R.'s most trusted political advisor. T.R. said of Edith, "Whenever I go against her judgment, I regret it." You said that earlier, Don, right? That whenever you listen to the woman in your life, make the right decisions, and whenever you don't, well, exactly. Bad for you.
You pay the consequences. It then resonates through to Franklin Roosevelt, which, of course, we'll be talking about later on with his relationship with Eleanor, these women that are the backbone of these men's lives who stand on their own. I mean, let's not forget that. They are great people individually as well, but it's an extraordinary story that is the mesh that holds this man's life together for sure. It's really also the story of letter writing, isn't it? That's where this all starts. These people wrote incredible letters. Doesn't it worry you that we don't do that anymore?
I know, right? I mean, all of these presidential libraries are now, I think the Obama library is 95% digitally native, which means only 5% was on paper. I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting for historians. In a way, there'll be a more voluminous record of everything that was exchanged. But in another way, it's not these deep introspective thoughts that you get in a letter where you have to sit and write. I mean, the famous quote, "I would have written a shorter letter if I had more time." I mean, I don't think we sit at an email and prepare to compose something for history that's deeply, and the keeping of diaries. I mean, a lot of these come from diaries or contemporaneous interviews, oral interviews. You know, you mentioned FDR. I just have to say, Don, I love what FDR said about Edith. She said, "She managed TR very cleverly without his being conscious of it. No slight achievement, anyone will concede." You know, that's the kind of power that FDR and Eleanor saw. They saw this dynamic relationship between TR and Edith. In many ways, you can draw a very straight line between the square deal of TR and the new deal of FDR, but also in that really productive relationship between husband and wife, first lady, and president.
Wow. It is essential stuff. I mean, it's really amazing lens through which to look at American history, for sure. These family relationships. That's what I mean about the letters. I mean, in this case, the personal dynamics actually inform the political outcomes of this man's life.
You have four sisters. I mean, I think if I had to boil the loves of Theodore Roosevelt down, I would say, look, it's a story about family. Mm-hmm. We all have a mother or sisters or brothers or a mentor or a boss, somebody in our life that picks us up when we're down, that propels us forward when we could have fallen backward. The myth of TR is a self-made man. He wasn't self-made, and he didn't do it alone. And that actually makes me like and love Theodore Roosevelt, admire him even more.
Exactly, yes. He's a 100% human being. He is. That's what's so appealing to the guy. But the women were behind it. Award-winning journalist and Roosevelt historian Edward O'Keefe is the CEO of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library Foundation, spent 2 decades in broadcast and digital media at ABC News, CNN, Now This, during which time he received a primetime Emmy Award for his work with all kinds of things, including a Peabody Award for ABC coverage of 9/11. I'm reading a bio I should have started you out with there, but I was so excited to talk about PR. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
This is great.
That's all right.
Remarkable career. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Don. Great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for listening to American History Hit. You know, every week we release new episodes, 2 new episodes, dropping Mondays and Thursdays. All kinds of content, from mysterious missing colonies to powerful political movements to some of the biggest battles across the centuries. Don't miss an episode. By hitting like and follow, you help us out, which is great, but you'll also be reminded when our shows are on. And while you're at it, share it with a friend. American History Hit with me, Don Wildman. So grateful for your support.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Thank you for listening to this episode of American History Hit. Please follow the show wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us, and you'll be doing us a big favor. Don't forget, you can also listen to all these podcasts ad-free and watch hundreds of documentaries when you subscribe at historyhit.com/subscribe. As a special gift, you'll also get your first 3 months for just $1 a month when you use code AmericanHistory at checkout.